Chapter 2 Titan Sports. In a boom period of professional wrestling, promoters easily maximized the weekly box office from live events throughout their regions. A promotion's top priority was strengthening an A circuit, featuring its top stars in its biggest market cities. In many cases, promoters also fostered a secondary circuit, composed of smaller towns using lesser talent. Spot shows were another important cog in a promoter's repertoire, as these programs serviced locations outside of the regular circuits, where fans watched the weekly program on TV, but seldom saw the sport live. High school gymnasiums were routinely booked for these events, and in the case of the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, spot shows were an essential element of its business. Imagine the WWE today running regular shows at high schools around the country. Just an inconceivable thought. But back in the 1970s and into the 80s, it was a regular thing. The WWWF's territory consisted of 11 states: New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Maryland, Connecticut, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Vermont, Delaware, and Maine. Additionally, the promotion operated in parts of Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio. In terms of geographic area, it was far larger than any single promotion in the United States, with the exception of the AWA, which ran from Minnesota to California and encompassed 9 states and parts of 3 others. The NWA, a union of promotional offices and not owned by a single entity like the AWA or WWWF, operated in at least 25 states, sharing Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio with the WWWF, and Colorado, California, and New Mexico with the AWA. Considering the heavy population centers such as Philadelphia, Baltimore, Boston, and, of course, New York City, it is not surprising that the WWWF possessed the most lucrative territory in the business. It received significant mainstream press from New York-based wrestling magazines and had a widespread influence. Monthly programs at Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, were monetary windfalls for WWWF management, and Vincent J. McMahon carefully booked his events to maintain their sense of importance to area enthusiasts. For that reason, tickets for wrestling at the Garden were a hot commodity, and events were frequently sold out. By September 1980, McMahon's company was in a much better financial position than it had been only a year before, and after taking in more than $4.1 million in total box office receipts, it had $330,000 more in its coffers than it had at that point in 1979, with $639,000 in assets. The cordiality between the WWWF, NWA, and AWA, known as the Big Three, grew immensely during the 1970s, and McMahon wasn't the only promoter to feature wrestlers from all three groups. Frank Tunney in Toronto, a roundish, amiable fellow with a perpetual smile, also benefited from the cooperation. Tunney, who turned 65 in 1977, began his career as an understudy to Jack Corcoran of the old Queensbury Athletic Club in 1931, and assumed a leadership role of the territory 9 years later. With an outstanding cast of wrestlers, led by the ultra-popular Whipper Billy Watson, Tunney built Toronto into one of the most successful and reliable wrestling cities in the world. Fans packed Maple Leaf Gardens, drawing immense gates, and the biggest names in the business made Tunney's city a must for shows. And because Tunney was so well-liked by fellow promoters, he received unparalleled assistance when it came to booking his events. The WWWF was intrinsically linked to Toronto from its earliest days as a promotion, mostly because of the widespread local popularity of its champion, Bruno Sammartino, north of the border. Between February 1964 and July 1969, Sammartino headlined the Gardens many times, earning a good payday for both himself and his handlers. Toronto was an easy flight